starting again. For all the brave souls who are here in person, and also the brave souls who are on Zoom. I'm really happy to be here this morning and to be sharing the stage, so to speak, with Tato. I'll just say a little bit about kind of what this is about. So we have something that is called a way-seeking mind talk. We're not the only ones who do this. A lot of Zen centers have this, and it's usually the first kind of major Dharma talk that a student would give. And the way-seeking mind is the mind of one's spiritual path. So usually a way-seeking mind talk begins with, like, when the person first realized that there was something more, or that there was something that they wanted to seek, or, you know, some kind of spiritual awakening that happened. It doesn't even have to be Zen, but eventually it led them to Zen, because that's why they're here. So anyway, because Kato is preparing for priest ordination, and we haven't set the date exactly, but we're thinking December, so in about 12 months. There probably will be one or two other people who will be joining her. And I think maybe they're not completely confirmed yet, so I won't say their names. But I've been working with Kato for a long time, and this is as sure as you can be about it. And also, we're doing this as a dialogue because, I'll just say, something that happens in Zen is that often you're asked to step out of your comfort zone. And I know Kato and I have talked about this, and she shared with me that she had kind of arranged her life to not step out of her comfort zone, to just do the things that she was good at and felt comfortable doing. And getting up and giving a talk in front of people was not one of those things. And yet, when I asked her to do the way-seeking mind talk, she said yes. She didn't really hesitate. She said yes. And then she started to feel really nervous about it. And so I think in our practice, we're asked to step outside of our comfort zone, but we're not asked to really step so far outside of our comfort zone that we're incapacitated. So as we talked more and more about it, I just offered, I said, well, what if we did it as a dialogue instead? So that's why we're doing it. And I think it's nice to do it that way. And she might ask me some questions too. So to start the way-seeking mind talk, maybe I'll ask you, Kato, if you can say what was your first kind of inclination of spiritual awakening? Can you tell us about that? And also, I should just mention that the idea of, like, whatever Kato is sharing with us is to share her own story, but hopefully then people can resonate either like, oh, that's something that is true for me or was true for me, or, oh, that's a different way that someone can approach the path. So I think it's a way as Sangha that we can all learn and be together. So if you would share a little bit about your beginning of the path.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you so much for this format. It really does put my mind at ease a bit. And I appreciate your creativity and flexibility, and honestly, I can say I'm happy to be here. Yes, I'm nervous. Thank goodness I haven't practiced.
So the people at home are having a hard time hearing in general today, so the more you can speak up, I think it will be helpful to them.
Okay, what helped me with this question?
I'm not sure.
Maybe we could set it on a table.
I'm getting piles of texts from people.
Oh, okay.
Are we on the Yeti mic, or are we on the?
We're
other
on the
mic?
Yeti mic.
You want to try the other one? Well, let's first.
They
see
can
if the
hear you with fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
It's the fan, but we can't turn it off. It's too cold today.
Let's try it now.
Okay, is that better? Can people hear me?
You still might have to project it.
Okay. What I said that people may have missed is that I am happy to be here and really, in a way, starting a new place on the path. And so it's a bit of a beginning. And so while I am nervous, I'm also excited and it feels right. So thank you all for being here and I know you're supportive. So, all right, the first beginnings. It's really hard to pin down the beginnings because it just feels like it's been forever. So in preparing for this talk, I had to actually think about something that sort of felt inevitable. Like, of course, this is the next step when I get there. But I hadn't really laid it out and paid attention to all the things that came together to bring me here. And so this process has been amazing. And I became aware of themes and patterns. And so I think I'm going to start as early as 5 years old. Now, I didn't know I was on any path at age 5. I grew up in New Brighton, in a suburb of St. Paul. And our family moved to that home, which is a new home, when I was about 4. And so I spent early years in nature a lot. And I really think I had this amazing opportunity to connect with nature and all the little insects and animals. And back then there were frogs and turtles and everything. And I just had a wonderful time. I'm going to call it a community, connecting to that community. And there's one day I remember in particular that I was exploring, and there was this old oak tree, and I decided to sit under it. It was the only mature tree in the area. And I was sitting under it, just enjoying this amazing, warm summer day, all the life that was around me, just kind of vibrating. And I seemed to hear the words, "It's going to be okay." And did I hear it outside of myself, inside of myself? I wasn't really too concerned about that at that time, but I felt it, and it felt true. And I think that was an early seed. So I was sitting there, and off to the left was the grade school that I'd be going to soon. And off to the right was the back of my house. And I got up and headed home. And maybe there was in some corner of my mind the question, well, why wouldn't it be okay? But my childhood was about to unfold. And there were aspects of my childhood that were uncomfortable, to use that word. School was challenging. And summers were amazing. So having what is popularly known as a neurodivergent brain presented challenges, but I also think as seeds too, because they gave me a chance to, I guess they caused me to go inward. So it wasn't really a seed. Would you like me to just keep going?
Would it help to, or are you comfortable sharing with some of those challenges?
Sure. I was
a little socially awkward. I guess I didn't have the skills, they didn't come to me easily, and I had some attention problems. I'd get yelled at for daydreaming all the time. I love to daydream. I still like to daydream. But this made it challenging at school. And so, what else would I say about that? So when a kindness would happen, I really paid attention. And then there's another memory coming to mind of a sixth grade teacher. I was the skinny kid who never said much. And one of the last picks for sports teams. But this teacher came up to me in the hallway and got in front of me and knelt down and looked into my eyes. And it wasn't creepy. But he was describing all the colors of my eyes. And somehow, I mean, I think of him as a bodhisattva. He somehow sensed that I needed something. And I felt seen. And I remember that. It stuck with me. And I thought to myself, you know, I would love to be able to make somebody feel that way someday. So, and then seeing kindness offered to other people from other people just would always light me up. So I think of those as early seeds. And then those challenges, of course, follow through as you maybe aren't too surprised into junior high school and high school. Every now and then I'd find my voice if I saw bullying happen. Say, hey, and then people would, oh, she said something. They would stop and give the situation some space. So those were early beginnings. And another thing that's coming to mind is this happened in my early 20s, but because I'm in my 60s, I think of it as an early seed. I had panic attacks, so it developed into panic disorder, and I thought, oh, I can't go on like this, I'm going to get some help. So I got in a group with other people who were having panic attacks, and so that in itself was amazing. Oh, I'm not the only one. But I thought, this isn't enough. I want to get rid of these things. And so I asked the counselor, I said, well, how do I get rid of them? It's nice that I'm not alone in this, but how do I get rid of them? And he said, thoughts cause feelings. Very cryptic. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, so are you telling me that if I stop thinking about the worst thing that could happen, and I stop imagining these panic attacks, that's going to help? He said, very Zen. And then he also gave another piece of amazing advice, which was, when you have a panic attack, just go into it with your attention. In fact, you can even take an inventory. Oh, my stomach feels funny. My hands are tingling and all this. And I looked at him like, what? Are you kidding me? I'm trying to get away from these things. But really, I was at the end of my rope, and I thought, I've got to try it. And sure enough, they started to decrease in frequency, and eventually they stopped. And I thought, I have to tell people about this. Oh my goodness, this is amazing. But I also want to say that that's what worked for me, and I don't want to say that that's going to work for everybody. Everybody has their own way of healing. But that was very, very powerful.
And you know, that sounds so much like Zen practice. I mean, what I've heard other teachers instruct, to just be present with what's arising. So anyway, so that counselor may not have been a Zen person, and yet it seems like that's also a seed for your practice right there, doing that, turning toward, turning within.
Yes, and I appreciate that he wasn't really prescriptive, didn't tell me I had to do this. It was kind of like, and then I was off on my own, and it reminds me of you, Sosan, a little bit, and I appreciate how much you don't tell me what to do, even when I want you to, sometimes. Yes, I'll think of an example, so it'll come to me. It's not coming to me right now. Oh, I have an example. Actually, you mentioned the discernment process earlier. During that.
And the discernment process, by the way, is discerning whether a person wants to go forward with priest ordination or lay teacher ordination.
Yes. Well, so in 2018, I first came to you and asked if you'd be my teacher. And so just to give a little background, that took a lot of courage because I was afraid you'd say no. Well, that's what you did. You said no initially, which is, I think, part of the process. And I think you had a lot going on at that time. You weren't sure you could take another student. But you gave me some questions, and I filled out the questions, even though I thought I don't need to fill these out. I know it. This is what I want to do. I filled out the questions, and I started to think, well, is this what I want to do? But I decided to go ahead with it and move out of my comfort zone. And I started showing up for things, volunteering for things, and it's almost like this old pattern energy started pulling at me. And it was hard to go on, and it started to get hard to show up. I'm like, oh, I don't want to. And then I started to wonder, well, am I doing this because I think I should? And I thought, that is not the kind of energy I want to bring to this path. And I shared that with you. And when I shared that with you, you said, maybe not. And so I stopped. And I think it was about 6 months. I went home and I gave myself permission to just enjoy my life. And maybe I'll do some gardening, read some more books, maybe a trip to a warm place. And that just did not last long. I couldn't stop thinking about Zen and the path. And then all of a sudden it occurred to me, hey, wait a minute. I'm not doing this because I think I should. This is true. This is genuine. And so I came back. So I do. I appreciate that giving the space for a person, for me, to figure out what's going on. Yeah.
And maybe there was a little bit of should in there before, mm-hmm. but then by just giving yourself permission to step away, Then you rediscovered that seed of, you know, that way-seeking mind, what you wanted to do.
Yeah, and there's really nothing wrong with the shoulds, I suppose, because they're coming from somewhere. Yeah, right. And maybe coming from a sense of duty or wanting to share something wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, wanting that teacher who looked into your eyes and saw you and wanted to give that gift to another person.
Yes. Beautiful. Yeah. So those little acts of kindness, they're the ones that really stand out. And I don't know if that teacher has any idea what he did for me that day. So I'm going to want to look at my sheet now.
Any questions, too?
How about, do you want to talk about what, how you first got involved with Clouds and Water? And actually, I'm just going to give a note to the Zoom master. That camera actually can just spin on the top, okay, and then it's a little bit smoother of a turn.
Okay, so, harder to reach, but
oh,
sure.
Because this,
yep.
No, without,
yeah, yeah,
without even touching, yep, that. This turns. Oh, but it's this spins just more easily. Anyway, maybe you already knew that. But.
Okay. So how did you first get involved with Clouds and Water?
Well, I was dating somebody who was meditating at the Minnesota Zen Center in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And he'd been through Jukai. And he would meditate in the morning. And I
can you say what Jukai is, just in case there are people here who don't know what that is?
So Jukai is lay ordination. It's where we soda rakusu, a small Buddhist robe, and take the bodhisattva vows, the precepts. So my path that led me up to even wanting to ask him about meditation had started way before that, but I asked him if he'd show me how to meditate, and he did, and I kind of worked to try to get the posture. It was amazing. I could feel when the posture was right somehow. Anyway, the first couple times of meditating, I'd sit there and it was just, I think I was focusing on my breath and it was so powerful. I had tears actually, the first few times I had tears. So simple and powerful. I heard somebody yesterday use the expression of thunderous silence. It's kind of like that. Just being something so simple and investigating what's happening, being curious. Those are all things that I feel were and still are kind of a part of who I am. I like to explore. So that was the start of something. And we started going to clouds together, and then we got married, and had a daughter. And that was in 1997. And I'm sure I saw you around there, but kind of still keeping to myself, I think, at that time.
And I wasn't a teacher yet. I was ordained in 97, but I was a priest in training.
So at that time, I was still just all about the meditation and the Dharma talks. Didn't quite understand the importance of Sangha yet. So then our marriage didn't last. We remained friends. And I moved to Stillwater. Started a blended family. My husband, Jeff, who's here. And that was great. And I kind of lost sight of a regular practice of going to a center, although I always stayed connected to clouds. Do a session here and there, do events, show up on a Sunday every now and then. And then I discovered that there was a community in Stillwater, which is Zen Bridge Community. Sensei is Yotetsu David Teshler. So I'm still a part of that. I've been a part of that for 11 years. And so after Jukai, that was my main practice there. And I started stepping forward. I should hope that the microphone didn't catch my stomach. And I was still comfortable with it. I was comfortable for a long time, and I want to say, though, right now, that I don't think there's anything wrong with comfort.
No.
I don't think there's anything wrong in enjoying your life. But for me, and I've noticed this is one of the themes, is for me in my practice, is that the comfort would start to feel like restlessness. There's something inside urging me on, and then there's something inside that's wanting me to stay comfortable. So I would come up against these. But I started to step forward a little bit in the sandwich community and take on some roles. Did Jukai. And then Jukai was in 2014. So there was another period of kind of settling into that.
And you're really in a leadership role at Zenbridge Community, right? You're on the board. And...
Yes. So for the past 4 years?
2 years.
Well, two terms. Yes, I've been the chair of the board there. So we recently became a 501c3 nonprofit. And let me tell you, that challenged my neurodivergent brain like nothing else, to the point where I thought, okay, somebody else can do this. And then I don't feel, and I mean, it's time anyway, that wall should revolve.
Yeah.
So you asked me, I think you let me know that you're going to ask about the barriers to my practice. So one of the barriers to my practice was just kind of being all over the place, interested in everything, wanting to do everything, wanting to say yes to everything, and then not having time to do any of it. Not having time to do any of it well, and then feeling kind of burned out. So, yes, having so many interests. So, one way I started to overcome that was just cutting out some things or cutting back on some things. Like, hey, I don't have to have a big master garden. I can do a little gardening. You know, getting a little pickier about what I was reading. And so I started to feel things come into focus. And that's since I started here, really. Because I feel like it's kind of upping the level here. And requiring it, it's like I can't do it without more focus. It's like I can feel the new neural connections forming in my brain. So that's kind of cool.
So how about, what's most rewarding to you about your practice?
Oh, making connections in the Sangha. But right now, that's what it is. Every now and then, Jeff jokes with me and says, I'm not so sure you're an introvert anymore. Because I just want to be a part, and it feels really good. In fact, I mentioned that I didn't fit in school. I feel like finally I fit in. Here. So I've got a lot of gratitude for that. You know, having two sanghas, two teachers, and all the members here, so wonderful. Yeah, rewarding for sure. I'd say another rewarding thing about practice is just feeling that energy that Katagiri Roshi says, he calls it, that lively energy of life, lively energy of life. And I have some words from him that I'd like to read because I thought they were awesome. Says, if you depend on Dharma, pure energy will arise and appear in your everyday life. It will illuminate your life because the original energy of Buddha is alive within you. That energy gives forth its own light, shining from your whole body, which others can see. So relax your frontal lobe, calm your mind, and practice dwelling peacefully in the Dharma. that is working deep in your own life. So I just read that, and just reading that, it's almost like I could feel that light and that energy. And so it's rewarding to feel that energy shifting a little bit from kind of healing myself and preparing myself to it flowing outward. And I would say living with focus and purpose.
What's that?
Living with focus and purpose. Mm-hmm. It's just getting more focused, and I feel more connected to my purpose. I have questions for you that I've been neglecting. So speaking of focus and organization, for me, running my life feels like, well, it is a full-time job. My life. I think about you, and I just wonder how you do it, how you take care of yourself, how you do it. You've got, I don't know how many students, but you've got a lot of students, you've got a center to run, and how do you do it?
Well, one thing is, and I was going to say this at the very beginning as part of the introduction, is remembering that I'm not alone. So, and you talked about the importance of Sangha and being seen and, you know, that sort of reverberation. So sometimes, you know, I was going to say that, like, we're setting up this talk as a dialogue, and it looks kind of clearly like a dialogue because there's two of us up here. But even if I'm up here by myself, I feel like, and even if I'm just doing all the talking, it's still a dialogue in the sense that everybody is supporting me. So I'm not separate from the Sangha. I'm not separate from the universe. I'm not separate from the little frogs and turtles and the oak tree. You know, so remembering that is how I am able to keep going. So that's one way. But then, you know, sometimes to remember that, I actually have to go off and be by myself. So that's another thing that I do. It's about once a month, not every month, but probably at least 8 times a year, I go off by myself for at least a couple days and sometimes longer, to just breathe and be with my body and be in nature. And I bring the whole Sangha with me. I usually bring the prayer list with me so that I do prayers for the community and also feel nurtured by the community, but I'm actually not answering to anyone in that moment or during those days. So that helps me a lot too. So those two things, it's like actually, and then, you know, therapy and massage, things like that too. So things that specifically help me. And then just remembering how I'm not alone. In a good way. So not, you know, not alone in that I'm being supported all the time.
Thank you. I know when I see, when I send an email to you and it comes back, I'm on vacation. I'm like, oh, good. another question I have, how are we on time?
It's about 10 after 10, so okay. Maybe we could talk for 5 more minutes or so, a few more minutes, and then in case there's questions.
Yeah, I think it would be great if people, even anybody wanted to share parts of their path.
Yes,
yeah. That'd be fun. What might you say to someone who is thinking about going further on the path, not sure if they want to, and maybe you wouldn't say anything, maybe you'd do this, but do you have any words or suggestions or guidance for anybody who just isn't sure, thinking maybe they want to take the next step,
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the first thing would be select finding a teacher. So asking one of the teachers here, or if you're connected with another community, one of the teachers at whatever community you're with, would they be willing to be your teacher? And that you're thinking about, when you say going further, I assume you're meaning like priest ordination or lay teacher initiation.
Or just taking the practice.
Just taking their practice deeper, yeah. So just to say, you know, to approach a teacher that, well, first, even before then, it's like selecting a teacher. So who is it that inspires you? Who is it that, you know, when you listen to their talks or attend their classes, you feel some affinity, you feel some connection. And so it doesn't have to be someone who's the same as you. It might be someone who's very different than you are, but that you somehow feel called to work with, like, oh, this is someone that I could work with. And then you ask them. And maybe they don't say yes right away, and don't be worried about that, you know, so, because sometimes that's part of the process, that's how it's unfolding. And then the next thing would be to start investigating, you know, what it is that you want. So thinking about that. You know, how can you step further into it? So is it, you know, making more of a strong commitment to daily zazen, maybe adding chanting, either whether it's with your community, with Clouds and Water or whatever community, or just on your own. If you're not able to get somewhere physically, or you're not able to get up that early in the morning, maybe you work second shift and you can't be in the morning zazen where we chant the Heart Sutra afterwards. And then, you know, connecting, you know, what are the ways to connect in community by volunteering? Because volunteering is also how we bring our practice to be with each other. There's some things. I have one more question for you. And then,
okay, sure.
So how has, since you decided to pursue the priest path, has your practice changed? And if so, how has it changed?
Well, it definitely has changed. I'm more connected to that energy. And more interested in learning. And for example, I'm interested in learning history. I never was interested in history before. So I just really want to keep studying the sutras. And I've been studying the period of the Buddhist history of the Buddha's life. And it's really given me a foundation for what came after. That's a change, but really the change is in just feeling a part of something and feeling like I have a direction. And for example, putting this talk together, how I got here was just all kind of swirling in my mind. And it occurred to me, wait, I need to know how to put words on things. If I'm going to share teachings, I need to have words. Seems kind of obvious, but really, so I appreciate this whole process of the way-seeking mind, putting it together, the talk. Yeah, did I write something down? Let's see. I think I'm just practicing more, doing more sessions. I feel more committed. I feel connections growing. And it's joyful. It really is. That is a change. It's sort of like with the more focus and that sense of purpose, you know, I'm just not getting in the way of myself so much. Yeah. It's just, and when I'm not in the way and that energy's there, there's joy and I can feel it more. Yeah.
All right. Well, that maybe is a nice note to end our dialogue on. And then we do have a few minutes. So if people have questions for Kato or me,
Or if you want to make a comment on what's been said, or if you want to say, you know, some little thread of your own way seeking mind experience, we would like to open it up.
It's up to that. Thank you, Ethel, for your talk. Wonderful. I'm inspired by your practice. I found really very interesting when you said the first time you meditated, it just felt, it sounded like love at first sight, or the yeah. first experience that it really worked for you immediately and it brought tears. And I thought, oh, I'm fascinated by the idea of neurodivergence and how working within Buddhism and working with Buddhism. And I kind of thought, wow, did your mind all of a sudden calm down? What made you feel? Because for me, I have always had a hard time calming my mind up. It sometimes takes me a long time of sitting before I really feel like my mind is calming down. Did you kind of get there very quickly?
I'm glad you asked that, because I don't want to give the wrong impression that Zen and meditating is easy for me, because, well, in the past few weeks with this talk coming up, yeah, thinking, planning. Okay, just breathe. Thinking, planning. Yeah, I think what happened there, if I had to say, guess, was that it was an opportunity, an invitation. Maybe I just needed an invitation to do something different with my attention. I don't have to be thinking about stuff all the time. I can just pay attention to my breath. And I think just doing that was a load off. I think my body finally went up, and my mind, and I had some kind of a release. That's what comes to my mind. And because that was so powerful, I know that's possible, and it happens sometimes in sessions. And every now and then I'll have a stretch of meditation where, oh, it's really good, and it's really like this. And then life happens, and so it's kind of like this for me. I hope that helps. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
I think we have a Zoom question here. Julie says, thank you, Kato, for sharing your journey. For me, a large part of my journey with Zen has been reconciling my whiteness and the privilege that comes with it. Since Clouds is on Dakota land and in the Rondo neighborhood, I have to get to the rest of the chat, sorry. And in the Rondo community, has this played into your journey at all?
Yes, I have a land acknowledgement that I did not read.
So thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your question. And it has played a role. Because I actually attended the class in my grandmother's hands, and healing racialized trauma, and I learned so much. And I connect that with my practice now, because I felt overwhelmed by racism, what I've seen in the news, everything, and was just like, what do I do? I have to do something. I kind of felt this urgency to do something and not knowing what to do. And so my practice has really, I'm using it to just understand my own greed, hatred, and ignorance, and look deeply into that so that I can show up more able to be empathetic and understanding. that class and the practices taught me deep listening. And that's where I think I have to start, and then also patience, because I understand that these things cannot be happen fast. And I became aware of my, as a white person, my strong desire to get it right, to be right, and what that does and how that actually does harm sometimes if I act from that place. Thanks for the question. I hope that answers it.
Can you go ahead and read the land acknowledgement?
Sure. The land we are on now was the site of cultural genocide and ethnic cleansing for Indigenous people. 160 years ago, it became against the law for people of the Dakota tribe to be in Minnesota. Sovereign nation was displaced. More recently, 50 years ago, a planning committee made the decision to run Highway 94 right through the Rondo neighborhood. Again, many people were displaced. Around 600 homes, 300 businesses destroyed. So voices were not heard, pain was ignored. So I believe that what happens here at Clouds and Water and in our individual practices is important. I think it's a step in the right direction of creating a new culture, a culture of empathy and respect. And I am really glad to be a part of it.
Might be a nice place to close. So thank you so much, Kato, and thanks to everyone for your deep listening and participation.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
And Happy New Year.